Good morning. I'm Natalie Rakitic. I'm part of the Tennessee Department of Health, and today I'm going to talk to you a little bit about splitting ELR messages for consumption by public health surveillance systems. Just a little outline of what we're going to go over today. So right off the bat, I want to talk about what splitting of an ELR message really means. So we in Tennessee and a lot of other jurisdictions, we use this term splitting because sometimes we have to split messages while we're processing. And really what this means is that we're taking the ELR message that we're receiving from our trading partners and we are manipulating them so that only one order or one observation is present in the message. So an order is the actual lab order. And I'm going to try not to say OBR and OBX throughout the presentation, but if I slip into that, that's what it means. Order is OBR and observation is the OBX. So a little background about Tennessee. First of all, when I'm talking about ELR, I'm talking about electronic lab reporting to public health. So I'm not talking, and those are only for reportable disease surveillance. I'm not talking about cancer lab reporting, and I'm not talking about ELR in other aspects. I'm just talking about towards public health. We utilize three main surveillance systems. So we have PRISM for STD and some HIV, and then we have EHARS for HIV, and the NEDS-based system is our main integrated disease surveillance system. So we send EOR to all three of those systems. We will accept HL7 version 231 or 251 from our trading partners. And then when we send that EOR to our surveillance systems, we're not actually sending native EOR messages to any of those three. For the NEDS-based system, we send an HL7-like format. And then for PRISM and EHARS, we have to generate extracts in our integration engine. We use Rhapsody. We have to generate two separate extracts that go to each one of those because they don't even really take an HL7-like format. So focusing a little bit on the NEDS-based system, that's our main integrated disease surveillance system, like I said. And user rights and roles dictate security in that system, and that's really important. We have a lot of conditions in there, a lot of data, and we want to make sure we're protecting that protected health information. So we grant users rights to program areas, which is just something in MBS where we put conditions. So program areas include, for us, SEDS. Those are communicable environmental diseases. That's really just general communicable diseases. We also have HIV, STD, TB. We have a number of different program areas. Program area is really based on condition. So a condition like salmonella would be in the general communicable SEDS program area, whereas TB would be in the TB program area. So this isn't super complex when we're talking about a manually entered lab report. A user's in there typing it in and they can manually select general communicable or TB for their program area. But for ELR, the system has to automatically decide what program area it needs to go to. So to do that, it utilizes codes in the ELR message, like the LOINT code for the resulted test or the SNOMED code for the actual result. If you only have one result, that's pretty simple. But if you have a lab that comes in a panel test, that could span multiple program areas, and then where's the NEDS-based system going to put it? So you could have a panel with STD, HIV, and hepatitis. For us, that would span three different program areas, and the system would have to somehow know where to put those pieces of information. So I'm not going to go into this really. I just want to put it up to show this is our kind of our message processing in Tennessee. And I want to highlight that I'm only talking about this part in red, which is really just once the messages are in our integration engine and then going out to our surveillance systems. It's really just one piece of the puzzle. It's not everything that we're doing. So before we ever even knew that we needed to split or figured out why we were splitting, we had to determine what our systems could accept and kind of the limitations of those systems. So this is a very iterative process that we followed, and it's probably much more simplified up here than what we actually did, but basically we would just discuss with our team a situation, a scenario, and then we'd create test messages, try to put them into our three surveillance systems, see what worked and what didn't, and then start again. And this is a process that we still do now, even though we've had these routes in Rhapsody in place for a long time. We continue to go through this as we have new upgrades or new trading partners. So through that, we found that there were really three main reasons why we have to split our ELR messages. The first is that the NEDS-based system only accepts one order per message, so one order observation group, and with exceptions, I'll get into that in a second, but not parent-child relationships. So right there, we have to split pretty much all messages that have more than one order observation group. The second two are what make us have to split sometimes based on every observation in a message. So PRISM and EHARS can really only accept one observation per message. And like I said, we're not sending them actual ELR messages, we're sending them a file. So basically in the flat file that we're sending, we can only send them one result. And then third, the way MBS handles program area assignment, like I alluded to, if you have a panel test that spans multiple program areas, we're going to have to split those out by observation so they're going to the right place. So before actually splitting, there were some things we took into consideration, and I'll go into each one of these. So snapshot processing, fairly complex, I think, to try to describe in a minute and 30 seconds, but I'll do my best. So it's an HL7 mode for message updates, basically. So instead of having something in the ELR message that says delete this or update this, some sort of indicator, if you're following snapshot processing mode, both the sender and the receiver are under the assumption that anytime a message is updated, all information will be sent with that subsequent message. So if on the receiving side, our systems, if we get an update to a message, we're going to overwrite that original message because we're assuming that all relevant information was sent again in the update. So here's an example that might put it into context. If today we got a lab that had Salmonella species, we'd put that into our surveillance system. But then let's say tomorrow that same stool culture grew Shigella. Instead of just sending the Shigella result tomorrow, that lab needs to send both of those results because in our system, we're going to overwrite what was sent yesterday. So if both results are not sent, then it's going to look like Salmonella should have been deleted and that Shigella was the real result. So why that's important for message splitting and not just ELR in general is because we have to know what our systems use for snapshot processing so that when we're taking one message and splitting it and creating multiple messages, we're not inadvertently overwriting every one that we take and we put into the system. So parent-child relationships, that's something that I talked about a few minutes ago, where we can't just split every message that has more than one order in it, because if it has parent-child relationships, which normally reflex testing, I think we usually think about drug susceptibilities, that means that those orders are actually related to each other and connect to each other. And so if you split those apart, they don't really make sense. So if you think about drug susceptibilities, if you don't know that all of these drug susceptibilities were for the Shigella organism, they don't make much sense. We can't have those separate in the system. They still have to be together and stay connected. So for that reason, we can't split those. And NBS does allow for us to process those in together. But so it just makes it a little bit more complex. We can't say every OBR gets split. And then a few other considerations. There are, of course, other system limitations. I'm just giving you one example here that NBS also only accepts one order common segment and one SPM segment per message as well. So we could potentially be losing information if we're picking and choosing which ones we're sending on into the systems from the ELR messages received. And also fidelity. I think that's probably the most important consideration here, that we have to maintain fidelity when we're altering what's being sent by our trading partners. We're trying to achieve semantic interoperability, so we want to make sure that we're not altering anything that's going to change the actual true meaning of what's being sent by our trading partners when we're putting this in front of our public health investigative staff. And so we feel like that requires strong informatics capacity at the state level. Okay, so how do we actually split? These are pretty much the four things that we do. I say we, it's really our integration engine, but we've told it what to do. So first it has to determine which messages to split, modifies fields, selects the appropriate segments to use, and then renumbers set IDs. So which ones to split? Again, this is all surrounding parent-child relationships. The integration engine has to be savvy enough to figure out that if there's more than one OBR in a message, more than one order, does it have a parent-child relationship or does it not? If it does, keep it together in a family. We like to call them families. If not, then it needs to split them out. And then on top of that, after that part's done, does the message have any subscriptions? So that's what we call the STD, HIV, anything that's either going to another surveillance system or has a separate program area in the NEDS base system that's not general communicable diseases. And if so, then it needs to split by OBX as well. That is pretty simple if we're talking about just looking for codes, just looking for a LOINT code or a SNOMED code, but what if it's a new code we've never seen? There's constantly new codes coming out. So we kind of double, triple check that to make sure that we're also looking at keywords and things, because we don't want a salmonella result to go to STD system, and we don't want an HIV result to be in front of a data entry clerk who really shouldn't have access to that. So we have to modify the field so that we can kind of get around snapshot processing. We found that there were four fields in NBS that were being used for snapshot processing. We have to modify at least one of those. We try to make a very benign edit to those fields so that doesn't change any meaning. And then we actually add in a note for anything that we are changing so that it is still in front of the user. Original, you know, field equals whatever it was. And we're not actually overwriting these fields, we're just making little tiny manipulations so that they don't overwrite when they go into the system. Selecting the appropriate segments. This goes along with only allowing one ORC and one SPM per method. We have to pick which one to use, especially for parent-child relationships. There could be more than one SPM. We have to only select one to send down. We could be losing information. On the flip side, when we're creating new messages from where one only existed before, we have to duplicate a lot of these segments. Some of them we only have to duplicate if there wasn't one before that went in that order observation group. Other times we always have to duplicate. So we know that we always have to duplicate the message header, for example. And then renumbering the set IDs. This is pretty much the final step. It seems like the most simple step, and it is. But it is just another step that we have to take. And we have to make sure that we've kind of pulled these messages apart and these segments apart. We've created new ones, we've duplicated, and now we have to put them all back together and make sure they actually look like an HL7 message. And, I mean, it's not super complex, but it's time-consuming. Okay, so what does this actually look like? Don't pay attention to the garbly goop, but this is a test message that I've created, but it is based on a real scenario that we've seen. And what I want to point out is this is the message in two orders, OBR1, OBR2, and then under OBR2, there's two results. And those are syphilis results, which for us are subscribed, so we'd have to split those. So one message in, three messages out. That's really what, I mean, this is what we receive, this is what we send to our surveillance systems. And when you start to think about that, how we've been talking about like counting grant metrics and doing all sorts of things this week, what are we counting? Are we counting what was received by a trading partner or what we put into our surveillance system? Because those could be two very different numbers for some of us, our jurisdictions. So final considerations, ELR doesn't end at a perfect message. We do a lot of onboarding with our trading partners at the front end. It doesn't end there. Then we have a whole bunch of other stuff we have to do once it gets to the state. It's a constantly ongoing issue, not a simple problem, of course, not a simple solution. Fidelity is crucial, and this really all comes out of systems that can't handle native HL7 messages. So my final thought, I've probably said this three or four times, but I'm going to say it again, why Tennessee must split is because we are utilizing systems, and we're not unique here, it's all jurisdictions. We're utilizing systems that cannot handle native HL7 messages. And these are the issues that come out of that. So going forward, it would be wonderful if the systems that we're using could move towards utilizing standards instead of insulating themselves from standards so that we don't have to take on this kind of burden.